The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The window slams shut, or more accurately, has just closed quite quietly. We'll discuss Cavani to Man United, Partey to Arsenal, Gunnarsaurus to free agent, and Choupo-Moting to Bayern. Our European experts are in, so we'll check if the other leagues are as weird and fun as the Premier League is right now, and if they're as exercised about handball. Juve-Napoli doesn't happen, but isn't called off. Bayern seem not quite as good as last season, brackets, i.e. last week. And of course, we'll have the Messi happiness scale. Atalanta flying in Italy, a 39-year-old pulling the strings in La Liga, and some high-quality nose-grabbing in Germany. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Archie Rintutt, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I'm pleased about that. Nicky Bandini, how are you?
I'm very good, Max. How are you?
Yeah, tremendous. Thanks. Barry Glendenning, how are you?
Yeah, great. Thank you.
And finally, Sid Lowe, how are you?
I'm here, Max. So that's about all I can say.
Just for the tape, I'd say it's taken 32 minutes for Sid to find a pair of headphones and any sort of device that means we can see and hear him.
I have 100% lost the will to live. It's only the marvelous pictures sent on the WhatsApp group that are cheering me up at this stage.
I don't think we've ever discussed them publicly, Barry. I don't think now's the time, but one day, and that makes it sound like.
That makes it sound like
they're of us, Barry. And let's be clear, they are not of us, are they?
No, they are not.
Anyway.
But we do have a Knight of the Realm to thank for them.
We absolutely do. Here's a question from Neil. He says, I'm sat watching Sky Sports News at 10 p.m. with the volume off and Lovecraft Country on the iPad, whatever that is. The big headline is Cavani signs for United, which we've all known for a week. It's been years since a decent deadline day. I mean, what's the point? Jim White doesn't even bother wearing his yellow tie anymore. Barry, you professionally had to watch 3 hours of this, didn't you?
Three and a half, Max. You know, it's a gig. I'm not complaining. There are worse ways of earning a living. Not much worse, I'd imagine, but slightly worse ways of having to earn a living than being forced to watch Sky Sports News for 3.5 hours. It's quite interesting. I always like on deadline day to make a note of what reporter has been designated what job. And I think my favourite was Gail Davis, who was reporting on Fulham's ongoing search for some centre-backs. And she was reporting from home. And in the background, she was in her living room doing a fine job, I hasten to add. And in the background on the sofa, there was this gorgeous dog. I'm quite a dog lover. I think it was a whippet, a kind of a bluey-grey whippet. I think blue is the technical colour. But she was discussing the finer points of Joachim Anderson arriving for a medical at Fulham. And while she was in mid-flow, the dog sort of woke up, looked around and started licking himself, which for me kind of sums up the whole Sky Sports News transfer deadline day in a nutshell. And I'll be honest, if I was able to, I'd probably been licking myself as well, just to alleviate the tedium.
Barry, is transfer deadline day dealt with in a slightly more relaxed way on the continent? I'll go to Sid first.
Well, they've actually started picking up on transfer deadline day as a thing. So, in other words, it's always been put simply, it's always been the final day of the window. So, there's always been a sort of a slight sense of excitement about whether things might happen, but it's never really been a thing until the last couple of years, and that's just been lifted directly from Sky Sports. The idea of right, let's turn this into a show. It's a recent import created to try and replicate something similar in England, but it's not quite as big, although yesterday was.
It's different. In Italy, all the transfer deals sort of go through a hotel. There's like a hotel where the clubs will have a representative posted there and they'll have officials from the league there to sort of get the paperwork done, and that hotel is in Milan. It was even referenced, I wrote during lockdown about a sort of famous football movie, L'Allenatore nel Pallone, and it's referenced in that. It's such a sort of cultural reference point, this idea in Italian football that you go to the hotel and, you know, people are meeting there, and that's actually also where some deals get done because different clubs are all represented there.
Presumably the Germans are just more sensible and calm about all of this.
You've not watched much Sky Germany then?
No, I haven't.
They do a a very passable impression of Sky Sports News in the UK. They turned the whole studio yellow. The thing is, it's like, it's just difficult to really get excited about. It's like they're being a lot more enthusiastic about transfers, which are not really setting the world alight. I mean, yesterday Bayern signed three players, including Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting, who, as my ESPN colleague Stefan Oersfeld pointed out, was once involved in one of the great Bundesliga transfer stories because a broken fax machine scuppered his move from Hamburg to Cologne back in 2011. So instead he joined Mainz, where he met Thomas Tuchel, who then went on to sign him to PSG. So if he'd not got that chance on the big stage at PSG, maybe he never would have signed for Bayern now. So that broken fax machine might have ended up making this big move for him. Although also maybe the way that he charitably missed a 92nd minute chance for PSG against Bayern in the Champions League final, I don't know what role that would have played for them. But but yeah, it's overall over here, it's like they try and do the hype and it's just like, it doesn't quite work. There's not quite the same drama as Peter Odemwingie driving down to QPR to try and get the move. No one's done that in Germany, so yeah.
So there was one quite big deal that went through yesterday in Italy, which was Federico Chiesa going to Juventus, which is a deal that's been sort of mooted. It feels like almost since he sort of appeared at some point, he was going to go to Juventus. And Enrico Chiesa's son, obviously, but not an uncontentious move because Fiorentina hate Juventus, because he sort of made a big play of the fact that earlier when he got there and was starting early on, Federico Chiesa, you know, being Enrico Chiesa's son, being playing for this club that he'd supported when he was younger, playing for the club where his dad had. There was a very cute video of Federico Chiesa as a little boy being asked who was going to score the goals for Fiorentina when Battistuta left. And he says, Toldo at first, which is, of course, the goalkeeper. And someone says, well, Toldo's a goalkeeper. And so he goes, oh, me. And then he does goes and scores the goals at Fiorentina. So he was this sort of beautiful story at Fiorentina. And now he's gone to Juventus, who are, of course, in the minds of Fiorentina fans, big evil Juventus. It's a 50 million deal when it's all done, but it's like a 2-year loan to start off with and then everything in installments. So it's certainly feels like a very pandemic era deal, because it's all sort of been done in a way to spread out the payments as long as possible and sort of wait until hopefully you've got cash back in the bank. I don't know if I like it as a deal, because Juventus have a lot of players for similar positions. And I worry for Chiesa, he's not going to get the game time, but it's certainly one that's been, I mean, it was talked about a lot last summer and it's been in the works for a long time.
Can we talk about Cavani to Manchester United? He's 33, had 7 years at PSG, scored 200 and 301 games for them. He's got 341 goals in his career, 50 goals for Uruguay. We discussed at length Manchester United crisis yesterday, Barry. Is Cavani the answer?
No. I think Manchester United's problems go far beyond anything Edinson Cavani, even in his pomp, could go towards rectifying. Look, I think they were desperate to get a body in. He's
still alive. He's still alive, Barry.
He is, yeah. And he may do very well. I'm a big fan of his.
He's got a magnificent body as well.
Yes.
Adonis-like. Big fan.
And don't get me started on those cheekbones, but he was injured for a large portion of last season. I think he scored 4 goals. He hasn't played for quite a long time, so we'll see how match fit he is. He didn't want to go to Manchester United. He wanted to go to Atletico Madrid. They weren't prepared to pay the money his brother, who doubled as his agent, wanted. I think it was 10 million quid in agent fees. And Manchester United were the only team, I think, that were prepared to shell out that kind of money, which I suppose shows how desperate Edward Woodward was to get in a big name and try and placate Manchester United fans, who were rather hoping he would get Jadon Sancho. That didn't happen. By all accounts, it never even came close to happening. And Woodward was sort of owned by the Borussia Dortmund hierarchy, of which I'm sure Archie could probably explain more.
So the Dortmund journalists have been making fun of Gary Cotterill having to trundle round all parts of Dortmund to just continually say, will it happen? And I've just started to see more and more pictures of Gary Cotterill turning up from Dortmund journalists being like, yep, he's still here. So the view in Dortmund is, well, we said it wasn't happening and we meant it. The only embarrassing thing from a Dortmund perspective right now is that Jadon Sancho had an infection that's kept him out of the Super Cup game last week and the game against Freiburg at the weekend, or supposedly had an infection, because then he was pictured at this party in London with Tammy Abraham and Ben Chilwell. So you're wondering, was Sancho pushing for the move there? You don't know, but Dortmund have stood very firm. And even if, I think, Ousmane Dembele and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang managed to strike their way out, I think that Dortmund were, they knew they didn't have that case on their hands here with Sancho, and that they held all the cards.
United have bought Alex Telles from Porto, the first left-back they've signed since Luke Shaw in 2014. They've also got Ahmad Traore from Atalanta. Let's move on to Thomas Partey going to Arsenal for 50 million euros. That was his release clause. Sid, what are Arsenal getting and how are Atleti feeling about it all?
Atletico, I mean, this is one of the things actually about the buyout clauses. That buyout clauses sometimes obviously are problematic for clubs, because it means you sometimes do lose players that you absolutely do not want to lose. And it can obviously be part of any negotiations with a player's agents over renewals of contracts and so on. But what the buyout clauses, I think, also allow clubs to do sometimes is to set a fee and for the player to leave and for you to be able to play the victim. Say, oh, this is terrible, we didn't want this. Now, there's no doubt that Atletico Madrid intended for Partey to stay, or at least that Diego Simeone did, that they've been giving him offers of a new contract. He's been a very low wage earner for the last 3 or 4 years and wasn't convinced by the offers that he had to renew, which were pretty generous. But in the end, given the way the market is, I think 50 million euros, Atletico will probably look at as not a bad deal. This is a player that I personally think probably should be a starter all the time at Atletico Madrid, but the reality is, isn't a starter all the time. And what Arsenal are getting is a midfielder who can kind of play the all-round central midfielder role. So he's not a defensive midfielder, but he can do the defensive work in front of the back four. He's not necessarily a driving midfielder, but he does get into the area from time to time. His range of passing is good. He's got the best long passing, I think, probably of any of the midfielders. He's probably a bit more incisive with his passing than most of the other midfielders. And he shoots very well from around the edge of the area. He is, I think, potentially a very, very interesting signing indeed. I must admit, I do wonder if the price might be a little high. But then I guess we're in a situation now with the Premier League clubs, and this certainly is the perspective from Spain, where they've got so much money that sort of a big price sort of doesn't feel like a big price.
Nicky, as an Arsenal fan, how do you feel about Calcio podcast got in touch to say, how can Arsenal possibly have thought it was a good idea to announce the sacking of Gunnosaurus as a cost-cutting measure on transfer deadline day, in which they've signed Thomas Partey for 50 million euros? It made Gazzetta dello Sport this morning, didn't it?
It did. It's international news. I'm gutted. I mean, I think it's very much an until the fans come back move from what's been reported, which I can understand from the club's perspective, that having a mascot when you haven't got games has a certain questionable element to it. It is very bad timing to do on a day when you're spending 50 million euros. And, you know, this isn't really, of course, about, like, I'm going to pull back the curtain here, guys. I'm sorry for listeners who are going to be upset by this. Gunnosaurus is a costume, but Jerry Kai, who's the guy who wears the costume, who's the guy who's been let off, is really well-liked at Arsenal. He's someone who I think has, you know, put in a lot of hours that people don't necessarily see, that go above and beyond what you need for a mascot. I believe he missed his brother's wedding one time for an Arsenal game to show up as Gunnosaurus. So he's a good guy, and I think a lot of people feel bad for him.
How does his brother feel about this? Because, I mean, once again, somebody else could have been Gunnosaurus that day, and unless Jerry Kai moves in a certain way, he might have got away with not being an ever-present. That's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
I love the idea that if the alternative, though, would have been to show up to his brother's wedding in the Gunnosaurus outfit.
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of mascots, say, getting involved in team photos, or particularly minute silences. Yeah. And Gunnosaurus was always like the master of the minute silence, where the players would be standing with their arms around each other, and his head is kind of naturally bowed anyway, yeah. But he always looked particularly solemn.
Does he do anything else apart from be the mascot? Is there some other sort of football in the community role beyond being inside the suit?
Well, I know he is definitely available for children's parties, as are Max and I, if anyone's listening. But you can hire a Gunnosaurus to attend your child's party or bar mitzvah if required. I believe it's free of charge. But if he's available, he will come.
I turned down going to someone's bar mitzvah. Somebody offered me quite a lot of money to go to their child's bar mitzvah. And I just thought it just seemed a bit... I just thought it would be so awkward. What would you do there at some child's bar mitzvah? So I'm not available. I am not available for parties and bar mitzvahs. You can go on your own, Barry. Okay. Lucas Torreira's gone to Atleti. Well, we're on sort of midfielders who have an Arsenal connection. Jack Wilshere announced that his contract's been terminated by West Ham. It's a shame, isn't it, Barry? Like, when you think about how great Wilshere was in his peak years and how great he could have become. And he's been unlucky with injuries. And I just wonder what he said, he's 28 and he's fully fit, whether he should just go and try playing football somewhere else, like somewhere on the continent or America or somewhere.
Well, he's not planning on retiring, is he?
No. He's 28. But like he's fit and 28 and ready to go somewhere. But he should just try somewhere that isn't England, I reckon.
Possibly, yeah. I think it'd be good for him. I mean, Jack's problem seems to be that he's constantly injured. He's got glass ankles, and I wonder how much of a punt clubs would be prepared to take on him with his injury record. But when fit, he's an excellent player and doesn't seem particularly high maintenance. I mean, he's had a few, you know, scrapes where he's featured in the papers for things he probably shouldn't have featured. You know, the criminal act of smoking a cigarette from time to time, or enjoying himself on holidays in Las Vegas, things people frown upon footballers for doing. But it's sad to see that he's cancelled West Ham and he have parted company, but I'm sure he will get a gig somewhere else. Possibly a little too early for him to go to the MLS, but Gunnosaurus aside, I found the whole thing quite distasteful. The whole transfer window, to be honest, there was... Before it opened, people were saying it would really be affected by the coronavirus, and the clubs, you know, were financially straitened and there wouldn't be much money spent. Premier League clubs between them have spent 1.2 billion in this window. Arsenal yesterday spent minimum of 45 million on their fancy new acquisition, got rid of Guendouzi on loan. Got rid of Lucas Torreira on loan, made Gunnosaurus temporarily extinct. And it just leaves a bit of a sour taste in my mouth to see Arsenal fans celebrating the acquisition of Thomas Partey while, you know, not too long ago, they were getting very aggrieved indeed over the fact that 55 members of staff, comparatively poorly paid members of staff, were laid off because of the coronavirus in a cost-cutting exercise. It's not right.
What are you meant to do, though? I mean, they're not the only fans to get excited by transfers, are they? Or is it specifically because of the redundancies?
No, I don't blame them for getting excited about a new transfer, but I can't be the only one who finds the fact that they're spending 45 million on a new midfielder slightly distasteful when their owner is a billionaire American who's married to a Walmart heiress who was pleading the poor mouth, you know, what, 4 or 5 months ago because of this pandemic.
I mean, for what it's worth, I think a lot of Arsenal fans completely agree with you, Baz, that they sort of think that the billionaire owner should be putting money into the club and not letting go of people at the same time.
Let's crack on through some transfers. Everton, well, Wes got in touch to say, considering Everton were reigning champions when World Wars One and Two broke out, should we start stocking up on tinned goods? They brought in Ben Godfrey from Norwich. They brought in Robin Olsen from Roma, a goalkeeper. I don't know, Nicky, in a word, if you think he'll compete with Jordan Pickford as first choice. Anybody probably could.
No? I don't think so.
Okay. Theo Walcott has gone to Southampton on loan. The return 14 years later. Apparently he's taken a bit of a pay cut to make that happen. Fulham, Archie. Go on, you can have a minute. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, a centre-back, Tosin Adebayo.
We signed two centre-backs.
And Joachim Andersen, yeah.
I'm so excited. We might eclipse Derby's points total, Ike. Do you know how much joy that fills me with? There's still a dire need for those centre-backs, so I have not seen anything of Adebayo. Exactly. Or Joachim Andersen, but they can't be worse than the options that we have. So question now is, how will they gel together?
I feel so sorry for Tim Ream. Anyway, Douglas Costa from Juve to Bayern on loan. He's one of those players who, whenever I see him, I think he's one of the best footballers I've ever seen. But I don't know how good he actually is.
Well, I'd be interested to hear Nicky's view of him, of how he got in, how he got on at Juventus. I thought he did decently at Bayern before, but Uli Hoeneß, honorary president and king of putting his foot in his mouth, said when Douglas Costa departed that he was a mercenary and somebody who you would question in terms of his character. So good, of course, that Costa
is this jailbird Uli Hoeneß saying that?
This is jailbird Uli Hoeneß, okay. Yeah. So good that Costa has now come back to the club. But yeah, he's not going to be first choice by any means. So I think he's more moving from one bench to another. That's the role he's had at Juventus, as far as I understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like he had a really sort of great, I think it's the 2017-18 season. He got a bunch of assists. And as Mike said, like when he's on, like he can look unplayable sometimes. Certainly when he's sort of running at full speed, he can be terrifying. He's really effective. You know, I think that's like a really obvious thing to say, but it's still the quality that defines excellent dribblers. It's not just that you can go fast, that you know what you're flipping doing when you are going fast, and he can when he's doing that. That's what makes him so scary for a defender, is he can work it while he's moving at full speed. But I feel like in Italy, it was an incident where he spat at a Sassuolo player in 2018. I think his career has never come back from that in Italy. Like he got a big suspension, and since then he's just sort of been on the fringes the whole time. There's been the
maybe Uli Hoeneß was right.
He's never been as prominent as he was supposed to be.
Devastating news, Barry. Sofiane Boufal has gone from Southampton to Angers. Do I have to retire your Boufal the song?
Well,
no, you just have to sing it in French.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I did know when I heard about that. The first thing I thought of was, you know, he did hear your ballad, didn't he?
Yes.
A fan.
He liked it. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
On Twitter, he officially liked it. He's gone, and Guido Carrillo is gone from Southampton as well, and he's gone to Elche in Spain. Mm. So he was apparently one of Southampton's highest earners, which is quite a feat considering I'd kind of forgotten he was even at Southampton, and he didn't make a huge impression.
It's important to point out that Sofiane Boufal liked the song, but he didn't retweet it, so he wasn't that proud of it.
A like is not necessarily an endorsement, Max.
No, absolutely not. He wanted it for a reference. I saw on the all the done deals that Nottingham Forest have gone to Olympiacos to get Cafu. He's 50, Cafu. So, like, you know, good to see him back out playing. And that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll start going through Spain, Germany and Italy and see how their leagues are progressing. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Quick one before we sort of go into the leagues in detail. Premier League has been a bit weird. And we yesterday couldn't quite make sense of all the results. I just wondered if that is just specific to England. Sid, how's La Liga? Has it been weird?
No, it hasn't been at all weird.
Okay, right.
I can't think of a game off the top of my head so far this season where I've gone, oh, wow, that was quite something.
All right, Nicky?
I don't know about weird. I mean, some things are still there. Atalanta have scored 13 goals in three games, but that's just kind of how they were playing before anyway. Napoli thumped Genoa 6-0, but yeah, I don't know if it's been overall any weirder than normal.
Archie?
Schalke are still really bad. They're 19 games without a win. Cologne are also still really bad, 13 games without a win. and Bayern a little bit worse at the back. So not really is the overall answer.
All right. And just before we go on to the leagues in detail, we had this sort of existential, well, I did. I had my first the game has gone moment with all the terrible handballs, penalties decisions last week. And then when we looked at the stats, like they've been given like so many more handball penalties in all the other European leagues. And I just wondered, are those leagues just better at accepting this? Or have there been these meltdowns? I don't know, you know, what the Italian for the game's gone is, or if people use that phrase. But
isn't it a case, Max, that we adopted rules this season that the continental leagues have been following for the last season or two seasons? So they're just probably more used to it.
Yeah. Quite possibly. Nikki?
The handball thing was a big story in Italy last year. I mean, the record for number of penalties given was shattered with like 8 games to go or something. So it was a big story. There were a couple of really high profile incidents. Biggest one was Atalanta Juventus, when Atalanta should have won late in the season, but 2 penalties to Juventus that were very much correct handballs, but modern rule handballs that let Juventus get the draw. And yeah, it was big news, but everyone is, yeah, another year down the line from where people are in England.
Sid?
Yeah, exactly the same thing. So this happened last year. There were loads and loads of handballs. There were lots of doubts about, well, what is the rule? What are we going to argue about? What's the criteria here? And you have this kind of there was a meeting actually at the start of this season, and indeed the start of last season, with the head of the kind of the refereeing body explaining to journalists all the new rules and explaining how it would work with VAR and so on. So we're kind of basically a year ahead, essentially, because as you say, the Premier League decided to opt out of this series of rules, so didn't like it. By the way, a series of rules put together by David Ellery. Now, if ever there was a demonstration of damaging football, that's what it is. That this is creating rules for the sake of it. There's a friend of mine who's a former referee here in Spain, and I don't think it would be an exaggeration to say that if there's one man he hates in the world, it's David Ellery.
God, there are a lot of men to hate at the moment, aren't there?
I'm not sure who it is. Some journalist, I think it might have been our former colleague Dominic Fifield, pointed out that of all the rules in football that it is possible to tamper with, David Ellery has tampered with all of them except one, that one being that the ball has to be round and a certain size.
It's only a matter of time, right?
I think Sam Wallace wrote in the Telegraph, didn't he, that it's 178 rule changes in 3 years since he's been at the head of the international board. I mean, I don't want to go down the cliched route, but sod it, I'm going to go down the cliched and obvious route. I mean, this is exactly what you expect from a housemaster from Harrow, isn't it? Lots and lots of rules, lots and lots of seriousness, and none of it really understanding the essence of what this is supposed to be.
Right, let's get into how the leagues are going. Let's start in Italy, Nicky. I mean, the biggest story is this game that didn't happen, Juve versus Napoli. Explain what happened and explain what the fallout's been.
Yeah, well, I mean, you talk about COVID weirdness, and it's not a result because the game didn't happen, but this was certainly a sort of very much a pandemic story, I guess. So Juventus was supposed to be playing Napoli on Sunday night. It would have been a pretty huge game. Andrea Pirlo, obviously, still in his third game as manager. Napoli, as I just said, had just thrashed Genoa 6-0. At the time, Genoa had 2 positive COVID cases, Mattia Perin and Lasse Schöne, both of whom stayed home, didn't travel to the game. But in the week afterwards, Genoa suddenly had a huge outbreak within their squad. So you now have a last count, I think it was 17 players who've contracted COVID in the Genoa squad. So Napoli, after this game, obviously there's a bit of apprehension about, okay, we've played this game against a team that had a huge outbreak. Is the same thing going to happen? Napoli had 2 players test positive during the week last week, Elmas and Zielinski. And their owner, Aurelio De Laurentiis, got in touch with the league and with Juventus and said, look, can we postpone this game? We want to, you know, we're worried about an outbreak. To which the response was, no, the league has a protocol, which it does. The league has a clear sort of protocol that was worked out in the summer together with the government's scientific committee to make sure that everyone was on board, which says that, but you're either supposed to be in a bubble with all your teammates at an agreed location, or you're supposed to be at home, basically. And then you get tested and you keep doing these sort of mandatory tests. And if your tests come back negative, then as a player, you are still given dispensation to go and train and play matches. So Napoli, in theory, were good to go. They were down two players, but the rest of their squad tested positive, at least, tested negative, at least in the meantime. They should have been able to travel to this game. But according to Napoli's version of events, they were on the bus, having sort of tried to postpone things. They were on the bus and ready to go when they get a letter from one of the local health authorities in Naples saying, you may not travel. You're breaking the law. If you travel, you should be isolating. And then they also get another letter from the cabinet of the region, the local government. So they've had a series of letters which they, you know, can hold up and say, nope, we've been told not to travel. And so they don't travel to Turin. Now, Juventus' position remains the same as it always was. This is the football protocol. The game is supposed to go ahead. And so Juventus stage the game, in effect. The team bus comes to the stadium. The players are all there with their tracksuits and their wash bags under their arms if they're going to use them. And the team Twitter account is posting, this is the bit which I find the most ridiculous. Team Twitter account was posting like a hype post in the morning, like game day, picture of Ronaldo. And post the starting lineup on Twitter. You know, I fully understand Juventus' position. I actually sort of quite understand both teams' positions here because both of them are following what they think they should be doing according to protocols that just totally contradict each other. I don't really understand why they're tweeting all this. I don't understand why the club's social media account is doing that other than to troll a bit, really, because I don't see how that's going to be relevant to the eventual decision. Anyway, this all happens. Napoli obviously don't show up. You get some very confused broadcasts. I think when I checked in on Premier Sports, there was like a line under the sort of picture, an empty pitch saying awaiting away team. I was thinking, well, you're going to be waiting a long time. They're in Naples, you know, that's 700 miles from Turin. They're not coming. So yeah, so then everyone waits 45 minutes as the rules have it, and then the referee comes out and says, okay, there's no game happening.
So who gets the points, or how does that, will it be replayed? What's happening?
Well, this is the next argument. And you know, this is what Sunday night became, was different people being interviewed on different channels and giving their version of events. And today, nearly the events president said, look, if the shoe was on the other foot, we would have travelled. The protocol is clear. Yes, De Laurentiis asked me to postpone, but we have the protocol. This is why we did it, so that football could continue. Napoli's lawyer came on Rai, I think it was, later in the evening, and he's asked about the sort of normal scenario in these situations, which is if a team doesn't show up for a game, they forfeit it. It's a 3-0 victory is awarded. And that's that. He said, it's not a given that that's what should happen here because the decision is made by the sporting justice. And he said, look, we have letters from the local health authority and these should be taken into consideration. You also got some government ministers going on air later in the evening and giving statements that were quite vague about their position on everything, even though, again, the football protocol was agreed with the government. There's going to be all sorts of mud smearing and mud slinging to come, I think, in the weeks ahead, because there's no way that Napoli are going to give up quietly on this. And again, the situation is that both teams feel like they have followed the instructions they were given.
On the pitch, two teams with three wins from three, AC Milan and Atalanta. Five different goal scorers for Atalanta against Calgary. They just attack with this sort of wild abandon, don't they, Nikki?
They're so good. They're so much fun. And I mean, I think when you look at the goals they scored in this game, there's a variety of them. Luis Muriel, just like a quick sort of straight ball to take advantage of a pass that a lost pass midfield. But then the goal that Papu Gomez scored, every player on the team touches it, including the goalkeeper, in the move that builds up to that. Papu Gomez is back on the edge of his own area before showing up at the other end to score. They're so good, Max. I love watching them.
Yeah, but Sam Lammer's feat for the fifth was so great, wasn't it?
Yeah, and just quickly on Milan, they fielded the youngest starting 11 since Opta started tracking these things in 2004 for their game. So they are also really fun at the moment and interesting to watch.
And also they had this brilliant penalty shootout, Barry, didn't they, against Rio Ave in the Europa League, pissing down with rain. It was about 30 penalties each, goalkeepers missing, hitting the post, in off the park. I loved it. It was just brilliant, wasn't it?
It was one of the most thrilling penalty shootouts I've ever seen. I think Rio Avenue, it was a bit like a darts game, actually. They had three to win it and missed all three, at least three to win it and missed all three. I think you could probably safely say it was a bit of a bottle job. But when both goalkeepers missed and missed identically, you're just calling for, where is Kevin Pressman when you need
him? Absolutely. Also, the Milan commentary was amazing because when AC Milan scored, it would be like, goal! And when Rio Ave put one in, which went, goal. It was like, it was just so funny. Right, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll do La Liga and the Bundesliga. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Sit in the hot seat. Let's do La Liga. Archie, stay awake.
I'm here.
Good man. You wrote about Sevilla and Lopetegui continuing redemption after they drew with Barcelona. Barca sort of back down to earth a bit after their decent start.
A little bit, but then in a way this kind of is natural. So what had happened is that Barcelona had beaten Villarreal 4-0. They'd beaten Celta 3-0. I thought they were very, very good indeed against Celta in difficult conditions. And then their third game, and by the way, it's a pretty tough start to the season now, Villarreal followed by Celta, followed by Sevilla, is Sevilla, who've only lost once in 25 games coming into the weekend's game. And of course, that's in the extra time of the European Super Cup against Bayern Munich. And it was billed as the real test of Barcelona. Let's see how good this Barcelona side are, how much of an improvement this really is. Which, of course, on the face of it, from the very start, tells you this is because there's a recognition that Sevilla are very good. Sevilla, I think, were probably the better side against Barcelona. And it's true that the reaction to this was to, it was a 1-1 draw in the end. The reaction to this was to kind of feel like, well, Barcelona have been brought down to earth, back to reality a little bit. But actually, when you kind of back off it and you think this is a new Barcelona team, it's only three games in, it's still very much a work in progress. Actually, a 1-1 draw with Sevilla, creating two or three chances in the last couple of minutes when they possibly could even have won it, Barcelona, is not too bad. But I think if there is a kind of a broader conclusion, it's to just to kind of look at it and say, well, on the night that we're supposed to judge whether Barcelona are any good, we saw for certain that Sevilla are. And that's not to say that Barcelona won't become a very good team.
Where's the Messi happiness scale at the moment?
To look at it from a kind of a Barcelona point of view, and as I say, the key really was that we saw a Sevilla side that knows exactly what it's doing, and Barcelona still have some doubts. The position of Griezmann, I still think, is problematic. Had they been able to sign Depay last night, which they weren't able to, then we'd be asking questions about, right, who plays up front, where does that put Messi, and what does that do to Coutinho? Ansu Fati is playing well. There's doubts, I still think, about that narrow midfield, because it's almost like they're playing 4-2-4. And then the other one is as you say, about Messi. And Messi, to be honest, should have won a penalty in the 92nd minute, had a shot just over the bar just after that. And he kind of became activated again in those last 5 or 6 minutes when it looked like, OK, this is slipping away from us, let's go for this. But I actually think he had a pretty quiet game, and it did feel like he wasn't as involved as perhaps he should be. And I do think that Barcelona have a bit of an issue with Messi, which is there's an issue which is the emotional side of it, as you say, the Messi happiness index. But there's also a kind of a mechanical question, which is where exactly do you put him? So they're playing him as a false number nine, but encouraging Coutinho to go beyond him when he drops into midfield and plays. Encouraging Griezmann maybe to come across into that centre-forward position where he drops in and plays. But of course, what it means is that everyone is having to react to him. So for all the new structure, you're still in that position that Barcelona have been in for a long time, which is that basically it kind of depends on Messi. And then that depends on Messi's judgment. And obviously, Messi's judgment is not a bad thing to depend on, because one of the things that I think doesn't get talked about with Messi, actually, is that for all his technical brilliance, he actually reads the game brilliantly. He understands the game fantastically well. But that having that one loose player that everyone else has to react to, and having that player maybe not being sure even of his own position on the pitch, I think is potentially still quite problematic, and potentially something that means that he's not going to entirely enjoy it.
I like the idea of Koeman just making him an impact sub and see how happy he gets. Real Madrid 1-2-0 at Levante. Looked to me like Levante could have got something from this game, Sid.
Yeah, I thought Real Madrid were very good for about an hour. Then they sort of fell out the game for maybe 10, 15 minutes. Levante could have had three goals in 3 minutes. Courtois is making one brilliant save every game at the moment. You know, if you look at the season so far for Real Madrid, I know it's very early to say this, it's only four games, but he's probably been their best player and is really, really important. And so I thought they were pretty good, Madrid, but then fell out the game. And Zidane said this afterwards, he clearly wasn't that happy. And he made a point of saying that this wasn't 90 minutes. And, you know, we've got to start playing well for 90 minutes because they don't entirely convince at the moment.
A 39-year-old Joachim still doing it for Real Betis, who are second at this early stage.
I love this. You should see the footage of this. It's brilliant. So there's the camera catches Joaquin, and I think it's minute, I don't know, 72 or something. And Joaquin turns to the bench and basically says, yeah, look, take me off. I'm knackered. And the next thing you know, the ball drops him on the halfway line. And it's like he's sort of decided, well, I'm going off in a minute, so I might as well go for this. Whoosh, he goes shooting through from the halfway line, outruns Kondogbia, who's not massively fast, it's true, but he is about 10 years younger than Joaquin. Maybe even more, actually. I'm not sure how old Kondogbia is. Reaches the edge of the area. The ball kind of gets knocked off to the left for Teo to score the second goal. That's it. Betis have won. They've beaten Valencia. The players all run after Teo to celebrate, because, of course, he's done the normal thing of kind of running somewhere behind the goal. Joaquin just lies on the floor, spread eagled, arms out, legs out, tongue hanging out, going, that's it, I'm done. And they take him off.
Oh, that's brilliant. And Condogbia, producer Jack, tells me he's 27 years old. So
there you go, 12 years.
Finally, in La Liga, what's happening at Valencia?
Well, I mean, Condogbia is a part of this. There was a suggestion that Condogbia might have gone yesterday. In the end, it didn't happen, which means it's just the five starting 11 players that Valencia have sold this summer. And as the window closed last night, or shall we use the official jargon and say the window slammed shut last night, Valencia had not signed anyone to replace the five starters they have sold. Javi Gracia, the manager, who of course you all know because he was at Watford, has been publicly critical of this. He said that he's been trying to chase players, that he got a deal, for example, with Capoue in place, ready for Valencia to execute this. They didn't do so. He says he hasn't spoken to the president. He hasn't spoken to the owner, Peter Lim. He has requested a meeting with the club presumably today or tomorrow, whenever they can do that. And I wouldn't rule out Javi Gracia walking away and saying, no, not doing this anymore.
Archie, the Bundesliga, a lovely few weeks for Bayern. In 11 days, beat Sevilla in extra time in the Super Cup, got smashed by Hoffenheim, scored a late winner against Dortmund in the German Super Cup, having thrown away a two-goal lead, and then needed four from Lewandowski at the weekend, including a 93rd minute penalty to beat Hertha Berlin 4-3. Are they not quite as on it as they were last season, i.e. 2 weeks ago?
So there's been a lot of chat about tiredness from Bayern, but they say it's in the head, not in the legs right now. Those were the words of Leon Goretzka and Thomas Müller. But Thomas Müller was being quite poetic about everything. He was saying that we're not on the pitch to do understandable things. He's gone from
stand-up comic to poet, hasn't he? Since the death of the Lewandowski joke.
He's still trying to, I think, have his cake and eat it on all fronts with that. He tweeted Lewandowski after the game, which is like, okay, you can give it a rest now, Thomas. But in all seriousness, it goes back to a point that Lars made on the Monday pod about the high-risk football that Liverpool are playing. I think it's a similar equation for Bayern. You have to be incredibly sharp to play the way that they want to. Now, I don't think that necessarily, it's not like the goals they conceded against Hertha were them getting caught high up the pitch. In fact, it goes back to a little chink in their armor that you had last season, which was from set pieces and from crossing. That is one place where they are susceptible. But I also give credit to Matheus Cunha, who has just been called up to the Brazil squad for the first time. He's a young player who is really worth watching. Was at RB Leipzig before going to Hertha last season, and his run plus about he bustled his way past about four or five players, and then made the 1-2. And for a moment there, for several moments, in fact, you thought Hertha are actually good value for a point. However, you then have to reckon with Robert Lewandowski, who is in supreme form. The fact that he's 32 and is still saying that he wants to be playing for five or six more years, you're looking at the fact that he's on 241 goals in the Bundesliga now, and the all-time record is held by Gerd Müller on 365, and you think he might just be able to get there. So four goals at the weekend, his second in particular that he made for himself was great. He's got his back to goal, and then with one touch, he's able to turn himself round and score. The fact that Hansi Flick is saying that Lewandowski isn't at 100% right now seemed like something of a warning to the rest of the division.
Well, at Dortmund, I mean, we know about Haaland, who got a couple, didn't he? But Gio Reyna, son of Claudio, born on November the 13th, 2002, he looked great, didn't he?
Yeah, there's quite a bromance brewing between Erling Haaland and Gio Reyna. Erling Haaland has called him the American Dream. I've seen one headliner dubbing them Rainland as well. In fact, wow. Haaland nearly took Reyna's head off in a celebration because he jumped. I've never seen someone celebrate with all the enthusiasm of Erling Haaland. And you can just kind of see his teammates like Erling, Gio Reyna and Jadon Sancho, I remember after a goal against Gladbach, just kind of recalling being like, could you just like maybe tone it down a touch here? but there was also a really sweet moment with Haaland and Reyna when you could very easily lip read what Haaland was saying to Reyna after he gave him one assist on Saturday, which was, you pass to me, I score. And you see Reyna laughing, but Haaland just kind of keeps a straight face being like, no, I was being serious here. But yeah, Gio Reyna, 17 years old, another outstanding talent, and can dribble like Sancho in those tight areas. Great range of passing. Defenders don't know what he's going to do. Very exciting player for everyone to watch right now.
Number one on the 13th of November 2002, Unbreakable by Westlife in the UK and Dilemma by Nelly featuring Kelly Rowland in Germany. Barry?
Well, like Erling Haaland, Gio Reyna is a proud Englishman, having been born in Sunderland, presumably his father was playing there. Has he nailed his international colours to any particular mast yet?
Big time. I think if Gio Reyna was to not play for the US, there would be uproar over there.
There isn't enough uproar over there at the moment. So,
well, I was very careful in my choice of words there, given everything that's going on. But no, it is nailed on that he will play for the United States.
I once interviewed Claudio Reyna without knowing I was interviewing Claudio Reyna. And I'm not going to obviously name the brand, but I was at an event interviewing a player for a well-known sports brand, and it was not one of those. It was a player who was playing for Real Madrid at the time, and it was set up at the Spanish Football Federation, and I finished that interview and I came out and someone said to me, would you like to interview Reyna? And I said, yes, please. That would be great. Thank you. That's really good. I mean, it's very rare that an interview falls into your lap like that. And I assumed it was Pepe Reyna, and I walked into the room and there was Claudio Reyna. And I've never invented an interview on the spot quite like that with a player about whom, and I will be honest and I apologise for this, Claudio, I really didn't know very much about.
Well, was your opening question, Sid, who are you?
I think it was, where's Pepe?
It would have been better if you just carried through with all the questions you were going to ask Pepe Reina. Yeah.
That would have been amazing.
It does remind me of when, I'm not sure I've told this story before.
Oh, you have, yes. Yeah. But tell it again.
It's a good one, right? It's a good one. We booked Sean Gota for Soccer AM. And on the Friday, we were doing all the questions and you know, we're like talking about City and blah, blah, blah. And then the guy, Chris, who booked the footballers, like, just texted Sean Gota's agent to say, look, is he doing anything? You know, what's he up to at the moment? And Sean Gota's agent replied, he's just doing a bit of writing. He doesn't think he's going to do Panto this year, right? So then Chris rings up and he hasn't booked Sean Gota. He's booked Sean Williamson, Barry from EastEnders.
That's even better.
Right. So anyway, Barry from EastEnders comes on Soccer M and does exactly what you said, answers all the Sean Gota questions. We did it. It was absolutely hilarious. I love that. Sean Gota might not do Panto this Christmas. It's really good. Quickly, Archie, Leipzig, Augsburg and Eintracht Frankfurt, the top three. Bas Dost with the goal of the weekend, I thought, for Frankfurt. A proper goal mouth scramble from him. Will those three be the top three at the end of the season?
The word for that goal mouth scramble here, if it has that kind of really gritty quality to it, we tend to say cactor, which
Yeah,
I think you can work that out. Yeah. Eintracht Frankfurt.
Sorry, so the penny just dropped.
Yeah, okay. Eintracht Frankfurt are, I think, if you're looking for a Bundesliga dark horse this season, I'd be having a look at them because they've not got European football to worry about. Leipzig will be up there and around about the top four as well. I think that Frankfurt will be a little bit below them. But to be honest, it's far, far too early. I think Augsburg will start to steadily drop down the table. Just the only other thing I wanted to mention in Germany was Roberto Massimo of Stuttgart having his nose pinched by Karim Bellarabi, which is, I mean, what was funnier is that it led to Stuttgart's equaliser. And it was just the way that Bellarabi was just almost, it was kind of like a big brother thing to your younger sibling, just to be like, what are you doing trying to stand up to me? And it just, on a football pitch, there's certain things that you can get away with without it being deemed a red card offence. So it's like, you know, if he'd slapped him, he's sent off. But by just grabbing his nose, he's just managed to toe the boundary there of being like, well, it's not exactly that aggressive a thing to do. So he managed to avoid a red card.
Did he do that thing where he pretended to have the nose with his thumb sticking to his head?
That would have been great if he just turned round and run away being like, got your nose.
Anyway, that seems enough fun for today. Thank you very much, producer Justice. We just made a honking sound. All right, that'll do for today. Archie, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Nikki, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Sid, thanks for fixing your Wi-Fi.
Eventually, pleasure.
Cheers, Barry.
Thank you. I enjoyed that.
On Thursday, we'll look ahead to the internationals and we'll do a big EFL special as well. We'll see you then.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.